Slam podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation of this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. If you are looking for card-by-card instruction on reading the tarot, please consider checking out James Wells and my new audio project, The Trumps Card by Card, where we dig in deep to one of the major cards and explore it thoroughly. If that sounds exactly like what you're looking for and gets your tarot juices all fired up, you can certainly also find that at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts. So I'm here today with Teresa Reed, the tarot lady, and we're going to talk about kindness. I want to talk about how do we be compassionate? How do we be considerate? How do we, in this age of easy access and immediate commentary, how do we stay connected to our hearts? And how do we live from that place in the world, hopefully without getting hurt or damaged by it? So, Teresa, why don't you give me a quick introduction to who you are in case anybody hasn't heard of you yet?
Hi, Andrew. I'm so happy to be here today. My name is Teresa Reed. I'm also known as the Tarot Lady, and I am a full-time professional tarot reader. I also teach a little yoga, and I mentor aspiring tarot professionals and other mystical types to get their businesses up and running. So a couple different hats.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what you think about kindness, because one of the things that I really admire about you is that you have great boundaries. You know, I mean, we see each other online a fair bit, and I see you working to be kind and to be compassionate and helpful with people. And at the same time, I don't see you taking crap from people who are directly abusing it, you know? So how do you stay in your heart or in your kindness center?
Well, first of all, kindness always starts with yourself. If you're not kind to yourself, if you're allowing people to abuse you or to misuse you or be disrespectful, you're going to have a hard time, I feel, showing up and being kind for others. So boundaries are really extremely essential. As you are taking good care of yourself and showing people how you want to be treated, that is really the first step towards becoming a lot kinder. I don't like anything that is abusive or negative or disrespectful. In fact, in my online world, I'm very cut and dried about that. If there is anything that I think is super cruel or directed at me in a negative manner, I care too much about myself to allow that in my world. So first thing that you have to do always, if you're going to be kind to others, I think you really got to start with yourself. Really big on that. Compassion begins at home.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And you mentioned something else that I think is really important too, which is this notion that what do we allow in our airspace? You know, I find myself often saying to clients, you know, so when you're hanging out with your friends and they're snarking about your other friends, what do you think is happening when you leave the room and someone else is there? You know, what we tolerate in our airspace, physically or online, certainly is what we're going to get more of too, I think.
I also think if you're putting energy and spending time with people who are really cruel or negative, it really rubs off. It's contagious. And I prefer not to have that in my life. I mean, you can't avoid it totally. And I can't even avoid sometimes I'm going to be really snarky. I've got a moon in Scorpio. I can be very quick with the tongue. But the more I work on being conscious, the more I realize that I'm not doing any good in the world by going that route. And if I'm hanging out with people and all they're doing is bashing others or hurting others or ripping on people and judging them, sooner or later, I feel terrible. I don't feel good about myself when I'm doing that. So I try to keep that out as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, too, that people often, will bring up stuff from the past too. You know, when that kind of snarkiness is limiting as well, in that it doesn't tend to allow for people to grow or change. You know, I remember kind of calling somebody out on something that was, I thought, particularly unkind, and they brought up the idea, or brought up that, you know, 10 years ago I had said something similar, and like literally 10 years ago. And, you know, I thought about it afterwards, because number one, in the moment it kind of silenced me, right? And then I thought about it later. I was like, well, no, I get to change. We all get to change. And kindness and being kind is not an either or thing, right? It's something that evolves and grows as our sense of compassion and our ability to be present and engaged changes.
Well, you can be compassionate and you can also not put up with any BS. And I'm a huge believer in nonviolent communication. It's a book that's written by Marshall Rosenberg. I suggest everybody read that book. And one of the things that I've learned from that book, if you are getting into a disagreement with someone about something they've done, you have to stick to the issue at hand. Because going back to the past, that's not, and keeping score, that's not kind, that's not compassionate. We always want to deal with the issue at hand. And I practice this especially with my children. In fact, that book really, really helped me a lot, especially as my children became adults and our relationship changed. How do I want my relationship with my children to be? What kind of example am I setting for them? And I found with the nonviolent communication model, anytime I have gotten in a disagreement with one of my children, when I practice that model, it diffuses the energy. We stay on track. We correct what it is that's hurting the other person. And we are always able to move forward in a healthy, compassionate, and loving way. It's a great model.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of tools do you use or suggest for people who are getting caught up in the emotions of those situations? Because, you know, it's easy. We're sitting here drinking our coffee and tea and having this conversation. But when stuff gets heated, what do you recommend for people to de-escalate that, to find a way forward, to talk more in the present about things?
Well, first of all, you want to step away when you're getting too overheated. If I'm really angry about a situation, I'm the last person you want to be around. And I'm a recovering angry person. I've had to learn how to control that temper. And it's not easy to do, but it's something I've really gotten a better handle on over the years. But I've always learned that as soon as I'm getting that feeling, or I'm feeling really angry, or something's escalating, I need to back off. I need to back off. I need to create space. I need to ask for permission to have space so I can come at it later when I'm in the right mind frame. Nothing ever gets resolved for me when I'm super angry, because then I'm probably going to say something I don't mean. I'm probably going to get up in someone's face in the worst way. How is that resolving things? Sure, maybe I'll feel good for a few minutes, but ultimately I'm leaving that person feeling terrible, and I'm probably going to walk away later not feeling so great about myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I step away. That's the key. And you know, in your day-to-day life, I think also meditation is really important, because it does raise your consciousness. If you are meditating or doing yoga on a regular basis, it really does help to center you. And when you're centered, you're less likely to react so strongly to things that really upset you. You find a way then to, okay, let me get back to my center. What am I feeling here? What's going on? What am I about to say? What am I thinking? So meditation puts you in that state. And if you meditate regularly, you're going to become a lot more conscious of your motives, your emotions, what your triggers are, all of that.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point too, right? What is actually going on? You know, I was a little grumpy with my kids. They're almost 5 and 7, right? And, you know, the getting them together and getting them off to school is not always a smooth thing first thing in the morning. And I realized after the fact that I had been grumpy, well, I knew I had been grumpy with them, but I realized after the fact that I had made the mistake of having a whole bunch of sugar yesterday. And then today I'm just snarky, you know? And I was like, man, really? You know, it's like 80% sugar and then the 20% the regular frustration of just, come on, I asked you to get your socks on 22 times. How many more times do I need? You know, so that, but in one way or another, being aware and willing to admit what is it that's actually going on for you, especially if it's not about what's mm-hmm. the immediate problem, is so important, right?
Right. And you know, we all have triggers. there's certain things that trigger certain reactions in us. And when I think about what are the things that make me feel really volatile, it's usually if somebody is dishonest with me. Or if I see someone bullying somebody, especially if they're bullying a kid, oh my God, that can't, that gets me a little bit nuts. You know, I have a very low tolerance for any cruelty to children. That really flips me out. And you know, rather than dealing with it like an adult, I automatically go into that awful space that I don't like being in. I don't like it if somebody is doing anything that is shady. I'm very straightforward. But I've had to learn that even though I like to operate in a world where everyone tells the truth, people don't take what doesn't belong to them, and children are treated with respect, it doesn't always happen the way my little idealistic world is. So I have to learn, and I'm still learning, you know, we're always work in progress. When I see something or have something happen in my life that triggers one of those things, I've got to really, really find that center so I'm dealing with it in a constructive way. How constructive is it when I see somebody being mean to a kid to go in there and come in and get really volatile? It does nothing. When I come in, though, from a very centered place and say, hey, what's going on here? Things get accomplished. There's an opportunity to move it in a good direction. So again, I know what triggers me, and I know when I get triggered, I have to really, boom, get back into my center and start operating from that place instead of the initial emotional reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, emotions are crazy.
Emotions are crazy.
They are crazy.
You know, we need to get that written in script. You know, like a nice tattoo. I'm gonna get my friend to write that up for me.
Love it I really believe that our natural emotion is love, and that most of us operate from a place of love all the time. But when we get triggered by something, it's very interesting to me to watch people, what gets their grinds, what gets them to act cruel. Sometimes it's jealousy or envy. For me, it's something gets me angry. It could be that something makes you feel really like a low self-worth. That might make you strike out and do something cruel. There's all kinds of interesting emotions and stuff and stories behind those unkind things that we do. It's never quite as simple as somebody's just being a jerk.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and I think that one of the things that is super helpful for me, especially in my relationship, is we've talked about these things. And I think that preemptive, in the way that meditation can be preemptive, right, in terms of our understanding or therapy or readings or whatever can be preemptive, preemptive conversations about these things are also really super helpful. You know, we have our own personal language of, hey, I need to step away from this right now, that we've talked about. So when it comes up in the moment, it doesn't push each other's buttons of, oh, well, you're just running away, or you just don't want to deal with it, or, you know, whatever the feelings that might encourage us to stay in the conflict or in the confrontational part, so that we can be like, you know what, let's schedule this for later, or I got to go sit outside and look at a tree for 10 minutes or whatever, you know, really, really can be helpful. And having that language that comes from a calm time makes it more able to be heard in a more heated time.
I totally agree with that. You know, when my husband and I first got together, one of the things that I told him right off the bat is I have a very low tolerance for any kind of jealousy. I don't do well with jealous people, and it also makes me feel claustrophobic. That's because my first partner was a very jealous person, and it kind of squashed any jealousy that I may have had ever out of my system from being around that energy constantly. So we had the conversation that, okay, I need to make sure we're not in a jealous, suffocating relationship. And he's been great to honor it. So, you know, we've been together almost 30 years. I think it's going on 25. I can't even remember anymore. Well, anyhow, it's the longest relationship I've had because there's none of that feeling. Oh, wait, no, it's 23 years. I can't even keep track anymore. It's too long.
For sure. After a while, it just starts to kind of blend. I have to do the math, right? My wife and I have been together 17 years now. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, okay, what anniversary is this? What year? How old are the kids now? We start doing math, you know, go backwards. So
cat math based on how old the cats are.
There you go. Excellent. So let's talk about the internet. Can we talk about the internet?
Yes.
So I really like Facebook and, you know, some of these kinds of places and things. But, you know, it's always astounding to me how much a venue for people's scripts and issues it is. It shouldn't be surprising, but I'm often surprised at how publicly people kind of get into stuff. So how do you conduct yourself on the internet? Because I see you there all the time. So
I try to stay out of wars, number one thing. I just am not interested in other people's politics or wars. I'm always open-minded. I'm willing to listen. But anytime something gets really ugly and heated, I prefer to step back and observe rather than jump in the middle and what am I going to contribute anyways? You know, probably nothing of worthwhile, nothing valuable. I don't go for any of that stuff. I want to make sure I don't get off track here with this because there's so much I can say about that. I've got to tell you, I have to be real honest with you that I'm actually shocked at the level of hostility that some people seem to have towards each other out there. I get very disturbed by it. I don't read comments anymore, for example, on blogs. In fact, I even got rid of the comments section on my blog, not because anyone did anything cruel, but because I was sick of spammers. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, you'll go and you'll read like maybe a news story or something, and people will be saying the most hostile, vile, cruel, just nasty, nasty things. And that really makes me feel sad. I feel hurt. I feel disgusted. I had to stop reading all that. I don't read that. If there's a war going on, I don't want any part of it. If people are busy attacking each other, it's just something I'm not interested in getting involved in. So it makes me, I think the best way to say it is when I see grown adults treating each other with such cruelty, it really hurts my heart. And I'm very sensitive to that. And I just have to tune it out. I have to like get out of that space. Again, it's about getting away from that energy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when people are being cruel, it doesn't make them look bigger or badder to me. You know, like, oh my God, you're a badass. It makes me look at them and say, wow, if you are doing that online to somebody, what are you doing in real life? If you have children, what example are you setting? Would I want my children to read me? Like, for example, let's say I had an issue with you. To attack you publicly and call you nasty names and make accusations, would I want my children to see me acting like that? You know, mm-hmm. I think about that a lot. Do I want my legacy to be a legacy of me being some really cruel person to people I'm supposed Facebook friends with? You know, do I want people seeing me on Twitter having to talk nasty stuff? No. I think a lot about what I post. And once in a while, I slip up too. I could be a real ass, but it gets to me. So for me, it's very hard to deal with it.
I think it's a really important thing that, because my experience is very similar to yours, and I am also very sensitive to it. And I think that that's something that people don't say very much. You know, I mean, I think back to my childhood, you know, growing up in the 70s where, you know, it was like not the most compassionate decade. And, I was very, very much, number one, especially when I was young, I looked up to people who were, you know, not necessarily mean, but certainly that kind of cool person who makes fun of other people and, you know, like kind of uses that as a way of keeping everybody in the line. You know, when I was young, I thought that was what cool was, right? And then as I got older, I started to see through it more. And especially as I became aware of how much it was negatively impacting me. And I think that a lot of people look at me, I'm sure a lot of people look at you and think, Teresa Reed, she's impervious, heart of steel, you know, Zen composure, immune to everything, right? And it's just not true, you know?
Right. No, it's not true at all. And, you know, when I was a child, I was extremely sensitive. And I was in a household where people were not very sensitive. So very, very difficult household to grow up in. There was a lot of violence and a lot of verbal violence. And I was always really turned off by that. And in school, I didn't admire those children who were mean because oftentimes those children were mean to me because mm-hmm. I was more quiet, I was intellectual, I was artistic, you know, so I learned how to cope with those people very, very well, actually, but I preferred not to be around that energy. I spent a lot of time by myself. I didn't really do a lot with other children because it felt much more like I'm more peaceful when I'm by myself because I know I'm not going to attack myself, you know? So I didn't really enjoy the school experience for that part, the social experience. And, you know, back then there wasn't as much attention to bullying as there is now, which I do like seeing more of the attention to it. So I never looked up to those children. And what was really hard for me to understand is how those children were sometimes so cruel in school, and then I would see them at church on Sunday, and they would be acting pious. Mm. And the hypocrisy really got to me, and that disconnect. And I almost thought, well, how can you be talking spiritual talk in CCD, but then you're in school, and you're being so cruel, and no one's doing anything about what you're doing? It just didn't compute to me. I didn't cope well with that. I just preferred not to be around it.
Well, and that's what we see on the internet too, right? This sort of this hypocrisy, right? In some cases, between people who are, oh, look at me, I'm so spiritual and I'm so wise and I know all of these things and I understand the secret history of tarot and if you're my friend, I might tell you what it is, right? And then the ways in which they are, people can be cruel, power grabby, yes. Sort of looking to be the owners of the truth and all these things. And yet, what truth? And who could even own it if there was one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, again, when you think, though, when people are acting like that, what is going on? Usually I find it's a lot of fear-based stuff. Because when you're striking out at other people, it's either you're trying to get power or you're scared and you're trying to protect something. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a therapist. I don't have all the answers to why people act the way they do. But a lot of times I see fear beneath that. And that's, never a good way to be operating. That's not a good place. It's not in your center. Mm-hmm. So, I see that too. I see the, once in a while, I see people also who really want to tell people how they should act as adults also. And they can do that in a tone that also has a shaming vibe to it. I call it spiritual shaming.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be also just as cruel. I'm holier than you. Look, I'm behaving better than you. Instead of going out there and proclaiming it, just do by example. Real simple. Be nice.
Yeah. Be nice. Be considerate. Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that I'm, I had an issue with a very small supplier where they had taken some stuff on consignment and stuff was kind of damaged, and I was like, we were emailing back and forth and then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go take stock of what everything was. And then I had this moment of, if this was me, I would be sitting there and panicking and thinking this whole order was damaged and I was on the hook for it. And I was like, let me just say this. Number one, I'm not mad. I was like, we'll figure it out. And number two, I think it's only like, like maybe 10 pieces or something. Like, it's not a lot, but it's just, we need to talk about it. And of course I get back this, oh good, thank you. I was worried that it was all like 200 units and blah, blah, whatever. And I was like, okay, good. Now you can relax while I go take care of it. And there's that consideration, right? What would I feel in this position, And I think that this is something that people don't get to, and even more so, I wonder if people are capable or are successful at being honest with themselves about what they'd actually feel in that position.
I think sometimes for people, it's hard to go into that position and to really think about what it would feel like. Because I do tarot, you're always putting yourself in other people's shoes all the time. You're sitting there at the tarot table and it's like, oh my God, these cards came up and let's find the way out of this situation. So you're actually always in people's consciousness when you do this work. So I think as tarot readers, it's very natural for us to be able to feel what other people feel. So I'm always shocked then when you do work that's very sensitive, why you wouldn't be practicing that when you're not doing tarot. You know what I mean?
I do.
Like, why would I then go online and attack Andrew here if I just did a reading and I realized what's going on and I can really feel why he is, maybe having some of the struggles? Why would I then attack him or anybody else? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think tarot reading makes you more compassionate. So I'm always shocked if I don't see peers acting compassionate. because you deal with people from all walks of life with huge issues. You know, I don't know, it opened my mind a lot to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. I think that I see some people, certainly personally, it's made me way more compassionate over time. You know, I used to be a lot more indifferent, you know, not necessarily like mean or negative, but just kind of indifferent to other people's situations. I was like, meh, that's your situation. There it is. And, you know, working with people and working very closely with people, especially, you know, I've got clients that, as I'm sure you do, you've known for a very long time, you know, and that also deepens the connections. You know, there's also the other side, though, which is, I think, something that is a really dangerous side to it, which is I'm the person who's got all the answers. All right. And I think that that's where that disconnect, I see it coming in most often.
Yeah, well, I always laugh at people who think that because nobody has all the answers. And, you know, as soon as you start thinking that, you've completely lost your connection to source. Nobody has all the answers. If you did, you'd be God. And I always say, if someone expected me to have all the answers, I'd be driving a Porsche, not a Toyota. You know, that's ridiculous. Nobody does.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what? You better be paying me a whole lot more because perfection is expensive.
You know, actually, when you sometimes find that you don't have all the answers, that makes you compassionate for yourself, too. Knowing that, wow, I know a lot, but I don't know everything, and I don't have all the answers, I think it's very humbling. One thing I love about tarot is that you do discover that you're still learning. Mm-hmm. And when you know that you are still learning and you don't have all the answers, it really takes your ego out of it.
Definitely. And it, sometimes admitting it can be truly powerful, too. You know, I do ongoing work with people, and I had this person, you know, we'd come to the end of our agreed upon set of sessions and we were discussing the possibility of continuing or not. And they announced that they weren't going to continue, and I didn't see it coming. And the work had been leading to was something really deep and profound. And I was like, okay, absolutely, fair enough. Now I don't know what we're going to do with our hour today because I don't think that opening up this really deep thing that you know, for one session and then sending you away is going to be helpful. And we ended up, in terms of talking about it, we ended up talking about what their resistance to continuing was, and it ended up moving everything along. And if I had thought that I knew what was going on, we never would have gotten anywhere. We would have just stopped, and it would have been really weird and awkward, and that probably would have been the end of it. So,
right. Also, if you would have taken it personally, and this is also a real big key in being kind, you got to like learn not to take so much personally, even though, again, I admit I'm very, very sensitive. When you take things personally, like an example, like your situation, it automatically pulls you out of the we and pulls you into the me thing, and that's when the armor comes up too. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be more inclined to do defensive things or say things that may end up being hurtful.
Absolutely.
That's a hard one, that not taking things personally. Very hard.
Yeah. Well, you know, I the thing that I remind myself is, number one, I'm the same as everybody else. I'm just a person. And number two, you know, ultimately with clients, people are paying me for my time. They're not paying me for me, you know, and so it's not really about me. It's about a service, you know, and it's just like if I order a pizza, you know, I mean, obviously it's not, but it is kind of the same, right? And I think that stepping it out into different kinds of industries allows us to sort of see what is realistic, you know?
Right on. I agree.
So I'm curious how do you deal with, I mean, I know how you deal with the haters because I've noticed your recent copyright issues and other things, right? Mm-hmm. How are you keeping your center through that stuff?
Well, the thing that I found, you know, once in a while, because I think it's because the type of work I do is so weird, you grow a thick skin when you've been doing it as long as I have. You know, when I first started out doing this type of work, I dealt with a lot of hate that I wasn't prepared for. People who thought what I was doing was evil, you know, against their beliefs, or I was full of it. You know, just I dealt with that early on. So I became really pretty immune to that. So when someone comes at me negatively about the type of work I'm doing, I'm just like, whatever. I just can't be tuned into that. I'm not plugged into that. I'm not trying to please those people. That's not what I'm here for. So I'm perfectly fine with that. But when I'm dealing with something like, for example, the plagiarism, I've been having a huge issue with that for probably about the last 2 years. And it started out when someone took my web copy almost verbatim and put it up for their new offering. And all of a sudden I found that and we dealt with that okay. But since then, it's become an ongoing problem. And I've had just very strange experiences. And, you know, I found the best way for me to do it with that kinds of situations is just deal with it legally. Just deal with it and take my emotions out of it and just put the legal hammer down and deal with it. And that's all I've been able to deal with that. I have to protect my work, and I can do it without being a complete ass, but boy, it's been a hard one. And I got to tell you, for me, when people do the plagiarism thing, here's my trigger. Okay, we're going to go there. I had identity theft happen to me twice. And it was by a loved one. So when I have a peer or colleague steal my work, it brings up all those old feelings. So I've been using this whole plagiarism ordeal as an opportunity to practice and to work through all that old stuff that's obviously still buried there. Otherwise, I wouldn't be having these reactions. And again, the only thing I can do is try to be centered, ground myself, realize, okay, there's something emotional I'm feeling here, but let me just do the legal thing and deal with this with not, without bringing anything else into it. That's all I can do. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
Yeah, I think that for me, I hear in that too, the something we've touched on a couple times today, which is the key of moving ahead with this stuff is often, what can I actually do? What is the action to do here? You know, is it to, in your case, send a cease and desist, you know, or a takedown order or whatever it is, right? Is it, you know, is it to walk away? Is it to, you know, what's the action that actually is going to bring some kind of resolution, you know, if it's possible? And that resolution might be, you know, every now and then I see someone post something on Facebook and I'm just like, unfriend. I just don't need that in my newsfeed, and I don't need somebody who thinks that that is going to be okay in my newsfeed. So, you know, whatever that action is, that can be really, really important, just to do something that moves it ahead.
Right, because again, you have to think about what is this action going to do for this person and for me? And that's always what you have to consider both sides of the thing. I can't sit back and be a doormat because that's not being kind to myself. Allowing someone to steal my work and pass it off as their own, to me, that would be like, you know, that would be like allowing someone to come in my house and rob it. I'm not into that. That happened, by the way, a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. Not into it. And that's not kind to allow people to take advantage of me. So if I'm going to practice kindness, we must start by protecting ourselves and taking care of ourselves. Then I can, from that mindset, operate in a way that's going to be more about, let me just do the right thing. Let me handle this the right way. If I go at it with full blazing anger, which is always my first reaction when someone does stuff like this, you know that it's going to blow up into some huge, awful thing. So I have to learn, step back, take care of myself, be kind to myself, and then do an action to fix this that's going to be high energy, not something low energy. Mm-hmm. Not easy to do. Boy, it is a constant practice. And that, again, that's what kindness is. Trying to be kind is a constant practice. It's not something you just get straight out of the gate.
Absolutely.
Although I take that back. My son is one of the kindest people out there.
Right.
He's just naturally one of those really good guys. He's like a little living Buddha. And when you're around him, it's like, oh, God, I've got to up my game and become a little nicer. He's one of those. So, you know, there are people out there who are just naturally nice.
Wonderful.
I love those kind of people.
Yeah, me too. So the other thing that I see a lot of online, in town, you know, whatever, is competition. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, I mean, perhaps you don't have the jealousy, so it's not an issue for you, but I'm wondering, how do you deal with sort of competitiveness and people who are competitive and, you know, that kind of idea?
You know, actually, to be honest with you, I'm so busy with my own grind, I don't have time to worry about what somebody else is doing. And I think that's really the key for me. I'm not a jealous person by nature. I'm so hyper-focused on what I'm doing. Often I find out stuff that's going on with this person or that person long after it's been done because I'm just not tuned into that. So for me, competition's not an issue because I'm too busy. And that sounds crazy, but it really is true. And I think if you are busy on your own grind, you're not going to be worried about what the other guy's doing. And if you're not worried about what the other guy's doing, you're going to be more successful. So that's really the key for me. I just am too flipping busy. And, you know, I also, my husband's he's really, really handsome guy. He's a death metal musician back in the day. And there's always the groupies and stuff coming around. If you're a jealous person, you're going to find competition everywhere and it's going to be a problem. It never was a problem for me. In fact, I usually made friends with all those girls. Mm-hmm. They liked me because I was nice and friendly and not some, you know, horrible rock wife, if you want to call it. And that's really just a better way to be. Hey, look, we're all in this together. Let's be friendly. You do your thing, you do my thing, and we're all cool. Stay busy.
Definitely. Yeah, I was hanging out with James Wells, and you know, his favorite thing to say is there's, you know, 2.5 million people in Toronto. I can't read for all of them. You know,
exactly. I'm very much in alignment with that. There is so much work out there, and my God, I could not read for everybody that wants to work with me. I'm always happy to refer people to other people or to people I think are better suited for them. You know, there's enough work for all of us, and people who have that competitive mindset, they're coming out of fear. They're coming out of looking at their colleagues as competition. And I always like to say, get rid of this, change the C word from competition to colleagues. You're not my competition, you're my colleague.
Mm-hmm.
That's the better attitude to have. If you are approaching fellow readers as we're colleagues, we're all in the soup together, you're going to be more than happy to share what you have and to support each other and be there for them. If you are looking at them instead of as colleagues, as competition, you're always going to be looking at what are they doing? What can I get? Why are they doing better than me? Why are their stats better? You're going to make yourself nuts. And that's just a terrible vibe.
Well, the minute you open your Google Analytics, you're in trouble anyway, right? Just leave that stuff closed and do what you're doing.
I never pay attention to numbers. I really, really don't. Because one of the things, and again, here's that competitive mindset. They're all about the numbers, their stats, all that stuff. And it's like, you know what? I'm about the people I'm dealing with. It's, I always say it's not SEO, it's about P-E-O-P-L-E. And I want meaningful relationships with my colleagues and my clients. I want to be connecting with people. When I'm on social media, it's not like, hey, I'm the tarot lady and I read tarot. I do a little advertising, of course, but I'm actually trying to make friends. I'm trying to form real relationships. I go to these conferences, not because I'm going to network, but it's like, oh yeah, I want to meet people that are like-minded. Let's talk tarot. Let's see how we can work together, how we can help. It's my Libra rising. I love people, and I love connections, and I love forming relationships, and I'm really into long-term relationships. Mm-hmm. So it's never about the numbers. I don't give a crap how many numbers are on my list. If I'm not actively engaging and we're not having some sort of a dialogue, does it matter if I have 200,000 on my list?
No, exactly.
No. If you don't talk to those people, what is that? If you don't care about them, what is it? I actually really do care. I want to know who you are. I want to know where your head is at.
Mm-hmm. And I find that too. You know, somebody sent me this really sweet email in response to getting my free ebook that I put out on how to read the cards. And, you know, they signed off, you know, like, thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with us and the world or something like that. And I was like, that's so sweet. But really, like, come on, you know, like, let's just hang out and have a coffee. Let's just, you know. You know, let's just be people together who have, you know, who have fun and struggles and you know, do stuff. And it's not really about, you know, any of that other stuff.
I think if you are determined to, like, own everything in tarot and have all that, I mean, I don't know anybody who'd be that nuts to want to operate from that mindset, but you're going to be one exhausted leader if you are just gathering numbers and gathering people and gathering everything. I just don't think that, I don't think that leads to a healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it slimmer.
Absolutely. And, you know, for me too, I think it's about connecting, and it's about what can I, You know, what can I do to support people in their journey and make everything move ahead, you know? And the more that I'm acting from that place of generosity, you know, it sounds like a cliche, and certainly, you know, some marketers will make it a cliche, but for me it's like, you know, like one of the best things I did was give away my beginner's tarot class. I'm like, this book, and I was like, you know what, I don't want to teach this class anymore. Here, just take it. Everybody have it. Go ahead. You know, and it's great. People love it, and it means that I get to teach what I'm excited about now instead of, you know, going through card by card, which I don't think is super helpful when you're starting anyway. And it creates all sorts of connection that otherwise just wouldn't be there. And I think that, you know, high level of generosity has served me far better than anything else.
Right on. Right on. When you're sharing information, sharing yourself, sharing parts of your life and your journey with people, you are creating real, true connections. There should never be any other motive but that. Mm-hmm. Never. You know what? And you know, the funny thing is too, and it's probably because I've just been in business a long time, you can always smell it when someone has an anchor, or not an anchor, an angle.
Yeah.
You can always smell it's like, you're writing that not because you're actually helping someone, you're having a motive behind it. But when you're really somebody sincerely trying to make a connection to help others, it really bleeds through. The sincerity comes through every time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Do you have anything you want to add before we wrap up the conversation?
Absolutely. I would like to tell people that if you are interested in learning more about being kind, I did write my little kindness e-course we talked about before. It's 30 days of kindness prompts delivered right to your email inbox. And the whole mission is, as we are becoming a little kinder and a little more aware of little tiny things we can do, we're just spreading that vibe, and that vibe pays forward. And it's a free e-course, but all I ask is that people donate to a project that I'm really fond of called the Peace as a Lifestyle. It's a wonderful organization run by a woman named Erica Ford that teaches children about nonviolence and about kindness. And I think that's where it all starts. If we start when they're small, helping them to become kinder and less violent, we are going to have a world with people who are thinking before they're speaking and before they're tweeting and before they're making an action. So my mission for the Kindness Hustle is to spread that vibe and also to help that organization, because they're helping the kids that are going to grow up one day to be like you and I sitting here talking about things like this. Mm-hmm. So that is what I would like to tell people. Check it out. It's on my website, www.thetarotlady.com. Look for the Kindness Hustle, contribute to the good cause, and learn how to be a little nicer.
And if you're listening to this, you're most certainly interested in tarot, do listen to Teresa's blog, or sorry, read her blog. It's always great stuff, and there's lots of great connections and great ideas just about living life and dealing with crap that the world throws your way.
Right on.
All right. Thanks. I want to thank Teresa Reed for being on my podcast this week, and I want to thank you for listening. You can find all of the episodes of this podcast at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search for The Hermit's Lamp in iTunes, in podcasts, and you will certainly find it. And if you are using iTunes and you enjoyed the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you would give me a rating. The rating system allows the podcast to be more searchable, which means that more people can find it. And please do find myself or Teresa Reed or both of us on Facebook and other social media. Come and hang out with us. Share your tarot journey. We'd like to hear what you're up to. Thanks again. Bye-bye.